Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live on YouTube. We're live on Twitch. We're live on Twitter/X. We're live on Instagram. Maybe you're listening later. Spotify, Stitcher, the app of your choice. However, if you are listening on Google Podcasts, please stop doing that. I mean, don't stop doing that right now. What you got to stop doing is it's going away at the end of March. So subscribe literally anywhere else that podcasts are posted. We are absolutely everywhere. Or on Google Podcasts, they have a thing where you can transfer it over to YouTube Music. If you use that, apparently it's very easy. So there you go. Everybody loves a little business up top, right?
Oh, man.
That's a fun part. Yeah. Really draw people into the podcast talking about.
It's my favorite part of the mullet. I've never investigated it beyond the business up front.
Yeah. I honestly, whenever I listen to WTF, I listen to Marc Maron talking about where he posts the podcast, and then I turn it right off.
Smart.
I'm like, I got what I want.
Yeah, that's the fun part here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
There's no Serial, comedy. Same thing. I solve the mystery of where they post the podcast, and I'm done. And
then you just listen through the MailChimp ad, and you're like, I got it.
Yeah, I got the gist.
That's I don't think you know what podcasts are.
I think I have a pretty fair idea.
Okay.
Is this a podcast?
Yep.
Not yet. Not until you invite in our lovely guests.
Hey!
Great to you up there, because we have a packed show for you tonight with three guests. Why don't we bring in our first one of the evening? He is the creator of the new book, Orange Flavor, Micah Rock-A-Rolla.
Hey!
What's up? Hey!
Micah.
Oh, boy.
Welcome to the show. Very excited to have you here. You are the creator, as I mentioned, of Orange Flavor, which is, oh, wow, print copy.
Justin's got a
print copy over there.
Nice.
This is something that I would suggest is lovingly inspired by the indie zines of our youth, if you will. And try to bring them back, throwing it back to a little bit of that old school anarchic. I don't know how you pronounce that word. Feel from back in the day from things like Raw and otherwise. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that what you were inspired by here?
You're exactly right. I wrote down my media talking points here, and the thing that finally I've wanted to make a comic forever, and the thing that like finally broke it open for me was reading Dan Klaus's 8-Ball. That's similar energy that you're describing right now of just like going for it, kind of a little edgy and just fun. Just having fun the way you think it should be, I guess.
Exactly. Well, talk specifically about the book then. Like what, once you decided, okay, this is the kind of thing I wanted to do, why Orange Flavor? Why this? Why was this the right
approach? So it started, like I said, I've been wanting to like make like a book worth printing basically for a long time. I've done a lot of web stuff and what have you. But I basically just had this backlog of comics that I was making for no reason other than just to text my friends. I was literally like making like 11 by 17 drawn and then scanned comics and literally just sending them by text. And I'm like, I like these. I don't really know where to put them or what to do with them. And then, I've been more of like a manga dude and more like indie stuff, but like not like you're describing, like where it's more zine and like almost like someone's own personal magazine, basically. And then when I saw 8-Ball, I was just like, oh my God, yes. I want to make my own humor magazine. Like that's what I want to do. And I found a place for all these odds and ends. And then I kind of I wrote a story based on my childhood as like the opening salvo, and just tried to have everything sort of have a similar energy throughout. Energy I coined as orange flavor.
Wow. There we go. Nice.
Makes total sense now. Yeah. Now, like, I want to ask you, what year is this? Are you starting working on this, texting your friends? Is this recent? I worked with you on a TV show many years ago now. Were you doing this then?
I was doing other stuff that didn't make it into this, but yeah, for sure. I would say everything that is in the comic is from probably like 3 years ago, as far back as it goes. But I was doing this exact sort of thing back then, just being like, where do I put this? It doesn't feel like I should make this a web comic. I don't really know what this is, but I think it's funny, and my friends seem to think it's funny, and kind of evolved from there.
We got a comment here from YouTube. Nat Townsend says, orange flavor reminded me a lot of Love and Rockets. Was that any bit of the inspiration there?
I discovered that afterwards, actually. And it immediately was like, oh my God, this is incredible. I don't know how I would describe myself. Like I missed all the Marvel stuff early somehow. My grandfather had a huge comic collection. Was just the most amazing comic collection you've ever seen. And he got me into like Little Nemo and all the Carl Barks Duck comics. And like what was the other Elf Quest. The first time I saw Elf Quest. He's legit, like legit, more legit than me, like legit.
ElfQuest is like right. Yeah. That's like the deepest level.
Yeah, like dude, that was like the first time I was like, what is this feeling I'm feeling looking at these sexy little elf girls? Like, what is happening here? I'm like 9 years old. And my grandpa was like, check it out. Pretty cool, huh?
Distilled. That's like dabbing for weed in a comic book. Yeah. The most distilled down version of it.
First time I ever saw Bone was him as well.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's the kind of like place I wound up comic book wise. And then I started getting into manga later. And it wasn't only until recently that I started getting into the more of like you're saying, the Raws and the Love and Rockets and then 8 Ball, which I straight up just like, I'm like, this is an amazing format. I'm doing my version of this format.
before we get any further. So every week on the show, we have a professional chef named Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray
Like
Bullet.
Most podcasts.
Like most podcasts.
As one does.
WTF, cereal, all they take a little pause to talk about the recipe of the week. We all know this.
Like, every podcaster has a professional chef.
Yeah, they talk about where they're posted and any changes there. Then they talk about the recipe and then I turn it off. I just cut it right off. I'm done with it at that point. Anyway, he comes up with a cocktail every week or curates a cocktail. And this week he was inspired by orange flavor. So I wanted to throw that up there. Super tiny. Sorry if you can't see it. But it is called Appropriately Orange Flavor. It is created by Stray Bullet Rock and Roll. And it's a egg white vodka, orange liqueur, Campari, orange juice, lemon juice, and an orange peel. Very like a orange creamsicle in the baker form.
It's an I'd love to get it for grown-ups.
Yeah, that's my speed right there.
Amazing, yeah. I'd love to get a copy of this because media talking point. Because this Saturday, I'm hosting the official launch party for Orange Flavor at Grievous Angel Bar, 53 Stone Street. And they're going to have orange flavor themed cocktails. So maybe I should get this recipe.
Yeah.
To that dang bar, baby.
Yeah, for sure. We'll send it over to you. It's going to be even smaller, though. Like, I'm going to keep shrinking it down.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's really great when you put it up on the screen and it's so impossible to read that it just doesn't make sense. It could be
said. We got to work for it.
Listen, there was some behind the scenes stuff going on with revising it and printing out a PDF. I didn't have time to. tech check that particular one.
Nothing a bartender likes more than getting an egg white based cocktail. Definitely do that.
Here's the instructions.
Yeah.
Buy a bunch of eggs. That's all I can tell you. Pete, before I interrupted you, though, you had a question or a statement you wanted to bring up.
Yes. Yeah. I just wanted to say, I really love this. This really did, like Zelbatron was saying, it really brought me back to my youth, seeing like a kick-ass zine again. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
My favorite line was the couple that said, we're not having children because we saw a bar graph on John Oliver. So a tip of the hat to you, sir. That was hysterical.
Thank you.
But the one thing I've always wondered about zines is, how do you know when an issue is done? Because it's a collection of stories. Like, how do you decide how many go in there? Where it feels too light, or you feel like, oh, this is the perfect amount.
Totally. I mean, I had the one you brought up. I had made and literally just texted people. That's all ever everywhere it went. But I had like 3 or 4 of things like that. And I basically I knew I wanted to do at least 24 pages. And then it felt done when I hit, like, I was able to truthfully say there's 10 exciting things in this comic. Like, like, even though like one of them's like, yeah, one of them's just like kind of like a page about me, but there's 10 exciting things. So that was part of once I hit 10 individual like segments, I guess I was like, okay, that feels right.
The Water Balloon Warriors really resonated with me. Did that. And let me ask you, you mentioned that being from upstate New York, can we get more location than that? You're talking
sure.
Two out of the three of us are legit upstate New York.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay. All right.
Guess which ones?
I'm going to call it Western New York because I know there's like competitions.
All right.
The guy from Buffalo always like comes in and like stomps you if you say you're from upstate. But I am from near Binghamton. I don't know if that resonates.
Oh yeah, Binghamton. Right off the streets of Binghamton, bro.
Yeah.
I'm like 20 minutes from Binghamton in a town called New Berlin. I went to school at SUNY Oneonta.
Oh yeah, dude.
I'm up in our region. I'm from north of Syracuse.
Oh, okay, cool. I didn't know that, dude. That's awesome.
That is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys should hang out and work on projects together and then not talk to each other. You know what I mean?
That's a lot of people. We work together at the opposition. Where we are, where you're from. There's a lot going on.
Justin was one of the nicest guys on the show. He made an effort to come in and say hi to us lowly editors. I always appreciated that.
I love hanging out with you guys. The vibe was right.
That was a stressful show. So, yeah, I would imagine it would be nice to get away from the writer's room for a minute.
Now that you have Orange Flavor done, and granted, you're still doing the launch, like we were talking about, you're doing the party coming up and everything. It's just starting, but it's been out for a while. So come on.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true.
Are you thinking ahead to an Orange Flavor number 2? Is this something that maybe you'd want to do quarterly?
Do you change
annually,
flavors or with each issue?
Like, great flavor. Been a lot of requests for grape flavor.
Yeah, you say.
Definitely, yeah. So here's my thinking. I made a website, orangeflavor.fun. That's where you can buy the comic if you
like. Oh, dot fun.
I know, yeah. I just paid that extra $10 for that sweet ending.
That's
look at you.
But yeah, I built a website, and it's it kind of works like a Patreon. You can subscribe. It's for free, no, you know, whatever. But I think I'm going to serialize stuff there, and the next printed issue will be collections of stuff that I really liked from there, plus like, you know, original stuff that only appears in print. And I would love to do like 3 or 4 a year. I think that would be incredible.
That's awesome.
Nice, man.
It's a lot of work, but it's like the most satisfying creative endeavor I've ever embarked on. Like it's just, there's something so cool about the creative possibilities of comic books. It's insane. Just like, you know, working in TV, Justin, I'm, you know, like there's a lot of people above you telling you no and what you can and cannot do, And
I don't even remember the word yes.
Yeah, exactly. I was, you know, working in that industry, and it was, you know, I was happy with where I got, but I also was like, I don't think this is quite for me. And I'm like, I have things I want to make, and like, I love comic books, and making it was the first time I was like creating more desire and energy to make than like working on a video where you're depleted at the end because it's so much effort, or this is a ton of effort, but it was like joyful effort.
Yeah, you're
so much
at the end.
Yes. Like it filled me with more desire to make more. So absolutely.
That's awesome.
I'm going to make as many as I possibly can. And hopefully in a timely manner.
That's awesome. Let me just say that Oneata is really lighting up the comments. You got Nat Talley.
Oh, yeah?
And one of our other guests is an Oneata person as well. So
awesome. Yeah. I'm going to hang out in the YouTube chat after you're done with me and say hello. Yeah. That's awesome. Oneata's a fun town. It's a good time.
That's the majority of our YouTube chat is usually.
Yeah, yes. Upstate New York.
Huge, you know,
a lot of food stuff, you know.
You know, it's funny you say this. I'm looking into buying billboards for my comic in Oneonta.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's a bunch of digital billboards. It's not that expensive. Like, it's shockingly like on par with like buying like a Facebook ad. I just want to do it. I've had all these weird projects. Like, I was dead set on getting my comic book in a grocery store, and I did it. So it's like the 90s. You can go to Associated Supermarket in Ridgewood, Queens, and buy a copy of
Orange. So cool.
It's like, dude, like that's like, it's I've just been having a lot of fun with it. I got in Forbidden Planet. I was blown away.
Awesome.
Like,
nice.
Shout out Maddie D. That dude's super, super nice. And like, I'm a nobody. He didn't know me. And he was like, this is cool. I'll put it in this store that everybody loves. They're like, I'm like, hell yeah, that's awesome. Desert Island took me. I'm quite pleased with the whole thing, the whole experience.
That's so awesome.
Micah, congratulations. The book is great. Good luck with party. You. I'll shoot you the recipe, even though
yes,
it's gonna be like you won't be able to read it.
He's my buddy. He'll get over the. I'll bring the eggs for him. I'll do that much.
That's cool.
That's nice.
Awesome. Micah, have a great night.
Thank you.
Yeah, take
care.
Great
to see you, man.
Thank you for having
me. Good luck. Come back.
I will. Orangeflavor.fun. Buy one, please. I got to get these out of my house. My wife's going to kill me.
All right. There we go. Micah Rock and Roll. Check it out. As he said, it's orangeflavor.fun. It is available right now. And it is great. It is, in fact, orange flavor, and it is fun. So there you go.
It's right there. Great brand points.
Great brand points. That's what we're all about on this show. We're also about our other great guests, including our next guest, who is the writer of the awesome upcoming, coming out tomorrow from Oni Press, Jill and the Killers. Ladies and gentlemen, Olivia Quartero-Briggs. Olivia, hello.
Hey. Hello. Hi again, guys.
Hi. Good to see you. Thank you for coming back to the show.
Yeah.
Big book launch. This is pretty exciting. This is coming out tomorrow. First 4 issues from Oni Press. And before we even get into the book itself, I'm curious, this is part of like Oni's, not rebranding, but big new push for books under their management. Mm-hmm. How did you get to be part of that? How did Jill and the Killers get to be part of this?
To be honest with you, I don't know.
That's the best answer.
But what kind of happened was that, you know, we were, New York Comic Con was coming up. And I'm from New York City. So yes, I wrote in the comments before while Micah was talking that I spent all my summers up near Oneonta. So I'm very familiar. My dad's from upstate New York. He actually, he went to University of Binghamton.
Wow, nice.
Grew up in like Johnson City.
Upstate
and all that.
Vibes on this podcast.
Yeah, I know. When that became a part of the conversation, I was like, oh my gosh.
Binghamton has never been mentioned twice on a podcast. It's a record we've just broken. That's never happened.
Well, I mean, it's not the hub it once was.
A lot of things like that.
Ani DeFranco tried. She put in, or was that the Buffalo effort? Does she have a recording studio in Buffalo or Binghamton? I can't remember.
No idea, but that sounds like
Ani?
True.
Anyway, so New York Comic Con was coming up. And, you know, we're were making great progress on the book. And I just kind of waved my hands around and I was like, hey, Oni people, are we doing something for New York Comic Con? Because I was going to be there anyway, because I have another book that's coming out this summer with Mavericks, the new Fate Winx books.
Yes.
So they were like, oh, yeah, we should do something. And then the next thing I know, I'm like part of this huge launch for the new year. So I have no idea if that was like already something that was in the works or if it was just me being loud and annoying that earned me that. But either way, I have no issues being loud and annoying. So, yeah, I lucked out and we did a fantastic panel. And Oni has really put themselves behind this book. I mean, I don't think that I've ever done this much press for anything. It's been really fantastic. And I'm super excited and super nervous.
Well, without getting too many into spoilers, I don't think you need to be nervous about the content of the book because I loved it. We read it.
We all loved it. Yeah.
I'm not going to pitch it. Can you pitch it? Because I don't want to spoil the twist.
Tell us how far. You have to show us
the first twist you have to spoil because it's it's part of the premise. The book is about this chick that I just adore so much. I spent a lot of time with her. Her name is Jill Estrada. Her mom went missing the year before. So she's been under lock and key at her dad's request, and she is just now going back to school after being away for a year. It's her senior year of high school. And she arrives back at school. She's trying to win back her friend group, and they've all moved on, and they're all like super into true crime and all of these murder mystery games. And so to kind of appease them and get back into her clique, she decides that she's going to pony up the dough and order this, you know, really expensive pioneering murder mystery game. That's like very much along the lines of Hunt a Killer. That was a big inspiration for me. The thing is, when they get the box and they start solving the clues, they quickly realize that this is not a game. These are clues to an actual real life missing persons case that happened in their very town and might somehow be connected to the disappearance of Jill's mom, which is the big overarching mystery. So you guys, you can go that far. It's out there.
Well, I love that. And one of the things that I really love about this issue in particular is how much time you get to spend with the characters. This is an oversized issue. So you really do take the time to get to know everybody. It's not the sort of thing where that last twist you're talking about, it's just sort of muddling along that you get there because there's a lot of different action and a lot of kind of gory stuff that happens at certain points of the book. Talk about the pace a little bit when you're doing something like this, when you're setting up a first issue in a new world like this. What's most important to you to capture?
It's really all about characters. And that's where all of my stories start. And I always like to say that if you develop your characters enough, they start telling you their story. And that's when you don't have to do the work anymore. You're just a vessel. That's very much what happened with Jill. And so what was very important for me to set up before we get to that big twist, which initially this is, it's a double size. It's actually two issues combined into one. So the issue out of issue one was the realization that this is actually, you know, a real life crime. And the gory part that you're talking about, they find some human remains that they think are fake and then it turns out they're not fake, which is pretty gross.
It's played for the gore side, but also for fun as well. So I think that's great. That's a nice, I love that tone that you're hitting.
You have no idea how much I appreciate that because as I said in a previous interview, which people may or may not have spotted, this is the first time that I'm really putting on my comedy pants.
Great pants.
So, okay, good. I'm glad that the pants seem to fit. They don't always, but I really worked hard on that aspect of this because comedy horror is like my favorite genre.
Oh, cool.
And getting to combine that with this coming of age, mystery story was such a gift, and I just want to do justice to it. But to answer your question about the pacing, the characters, you needed to be invested in the characters before we got to the hook. So most of the first issue is just really getting the readers involved in Jill, having them love Jill, understanding the relationship dynamics with her dad, with Ginger, who is, you know, her kind of ex-best friend, almost girlfriend from back in the day. And then this new girl, Clyde, who's come into the mix and kind of taken over her friend group. So it's, you know, it's getting everybody situated in this world. Of Seligman, Arizona, which is a real town. it's this kind of it's not abandoned. There's still people that live there, but it's an old Route 66 town.
It's like the Binghamton of the West in a lot of
it. Honestly, you drive through it, you won't see a single person, but you will see about 20 mannequins, fully dressed mannequins in storefronts, on storefronts. So like you'll see that mannequins appear a lot in the artwork and on the covers.
Whoa. Oh, that's awesome.
Do an homage to that town. So it's, I find it a totally fascinating place. It's creepy and beautiful all at the same time, which are all the things that that I love. So it was a good home for this. So yeah, in terms of pacing with the first issue, it's a lot of character. And, you know, you're introduced to all the people in this world that are going to become important. But, you know, pay attention, because a lot of the things that you see in that first issue, I forget who said this, but, you know, in terms of story structure, if, you know, you want to put your characters up in a tree. Right. And if there's a ladder that gets them down, you got to introduce that ladder in the first book, and it's there. So it's just about, you know, introducing people to the characters in the world. There are elements of this case that these girls are going to use that they don't even know they're going to use that are introduced in that.
That's great. One other thing I want to say about just the what you're laying out here is I feel like a lot of books might say like, oh, she's new to town. And then she gets involved in this. I love that she's coming back and she has to fight her way back into her friend group. That hit
very
high school. And it hit a personal, like that specificity hits like personal memories in me anyway. I'm like, I want to get that. My friends are mad at me. How do I get back in with them? And so
I'm so glad to hear that, because it was actually personal for me too. I went to the same school almost all the way through, but there was 1 year in seventh grade where my mom, hi mom, everyone say hi to my mom, she's watching.
Hi mom.
Hi.
I moved with my mom to Pennsylvania for a year and then came back.
Ooh.
I had missed seventh grade, which if you're a girl, it's like the worst year to miss. Formative. It was like eons had passed. And I was trying to catch up again. And like, people were mad at me. Like it was for leaving them. It was a whole big thing. So I'm glad that struck a chord with you too. Cause that was personal for me. That's awesome.
Pete, you were going to say something.
Yeah. Well, first off, congratulations. This is awesome. A lot of times when you get to the end of a book and there's that kind of big reveal or kind of like moment, especially with the body part there, and I was just like, oh shit, I'm all the way in now. Like it did such a great job of kind of like raising
all you
the
need
stakes
is the severed foot, Pete. That's all you need.
Spoilers, geez. I'm working so hard. I'm usually the person
blowing
the spoilers.
It's okay. We're not spoiling anything after book one. Just so everyone knows. First issue, you get two full books.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about anything beyond page 24. Just so you know.
All right, cool. But yeah, I was just, was that one of those things where you kind of like write the ending first and then work your way back? Because I felt like you did such a great job of like full circle moment, like really kind of landed the ship there. So how did you write this? Like, what was your kind of like, was it one of those things where you did the ending, had a time and kind of wrote to that? Or how did you kind of do it?
Well, I mean, The first thing that happened was that little nugget of an idea. What if you got one of these murder mystery box games and it ended up being?
Okay.
And that was just like the little nugget that I pitched to Oni, because I had just begun forming a relationship with them. Because as you guys know, I was an Aftershock baby before. They were the only people that had published me. So I was like, you know, I was really determined to make myself known. And Oni, you know, they entertained me. So that was the first part of the idea. Then came Jill as a character and developing her. And then then came the mystery, which was terrifying, because I've worked on television shows that had overarching mysteries, but I was certainly not in charge of crafting them from start to finish. And I also worked on a show called Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. So I saw how you really do, when you're solving any sort of case, you have to start at the end and work your way back. So I had to decide who did this, how they did it, why they did it, and then work my way backwards in terms of the clues and how the girls were going to uncover this. And then the next layer came their personal journeys, their arcs that I knew that I wanted to craft, and a lot of them, you know, overlap. A lot of these girls are dealing with some of the same things and they collide in various ways. So then making those emotional arcs part of the investigation so that they're not two separate things. It's not someone's having an emotional journey over here and then solving a case over here. Mm-hmm. The case itself and working together and the things that they discover are pushing their emotional arcs forward. And that honestly was probably the hardest part of crafting. Oh my God.
Well, you killed it.
Firewall. Oh, thank you. And you guys haven't even gotten to the end yet, so don't tell me that.
We'll see. So we far. Retract. All of our comments were retracted.
You have killed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there any music influence here? And the reason I ask is because the title, Jill and the Killers, immediately makes me think of like a band.
Yeah.
The cover a little bit looks like an album cover. Is that just coincidence or was that in the book at all?
Are you just inherently badass or like
and then
yes
yeah because, there you go
yeah I know they look like band hats, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
That's merch.
I'm very excited about these. I know I got merch. I'm bringing them to signings. If you come to a signing, you'll get a free hat.
Ooh.
So that's my incentive, because I'm too insecure to think that people will just come to see my book. So if you get a hat, you'll come, right?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. That looks cool and warm.
Yeah.
No, you know, it's funny. Little trade secret, since you guys are who you are. The original title for this book was Jill in the Box. It's a direct kind of, it's an homage to and a subversion of these same types of coming of age stories from my youth that all had casts of boys for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. So you right, have yes. like the Goonies and Stand By Me and Hardy Boys, right? Like and Lord of the Flies was another like favorite of mine. Mm. And Monster Squad. When I would, you know, when I was a kid, like fantasizing about putting myself into those stories, even though some of them, like, you know, they had a token girl. If there was a group of boys that decided on one girl to hang out with, it was not going to be me. Like that was, you know, I wanted to make this a group of girls that are, you know, it's a very similar type of genre, but to make it easier for, you know, girls like me to imagine themselves in the story. So for that reason, all of the characters' names are the female part of male-female duos where the male name came first. So Jack and Jill, obviously. Juliet is mom's name, Romeo and Juliet. Fred Astaire, mm-hmm. Ginger Rogers. We have Ginger.
Ah,
that's awesome.
Sonny and Cher, we have Cher. Ah. And then we have Clyde, of Bonnie and Clyde. Obviously, there's something different happening here, and that's because she's the character who comes in and shakes things up. So,
there is a lot of layers going on here. I know.
I tried really hard. Also, you guys should know this book is like 4 years in the making, so I had a lot of time to do all of it. So it was Jill in the Box, Jack in the Box, right?
Right.
Then like Oni was like, listen, Olivia, we appreciate all of this like feminist blah, blah, blah that you keep telling us about. But it's not telling readers enough of what the book is about and where we want this book to sell. So finally I was like, okay, guys, I'll get crunchy and commercial with you. And Jill and the Killers was something that I pitched to them. And I, knowing full well that it sounded like a band name, and also that people might assume that her friends are killers or that she is part of a killer. But I think that people get it. And I think that people are talking about it as a title. So yeah, that's where the title came from. But it's so funny now. And this is how things always work when it's the right choice. And Oni made the right choice. I only know it as Jill and the Killers now. And that's all.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, it's a hook. It's got a hook. That's what gets it in your hand. And it's
right. Because, I mean, and this is a little tease, but this is not the mystery that we get to solve in this first four book arc. Now that we combine the first two, it's not the only mystery that we can tell. There's a lot more going on behind the scenes, and there's a nice juicy cliffhanger at the end of the final book, which, you know, leads. There's a lot more to be solved. There's a lot more killers.
Yeah, out it feels there. That way.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad. And I really hope that readers love it, because I could tell stories with these girls forever. They're
awesome.
And working with Roberta is a dream.
I mean, the arts. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah. It's off the chain. I mean,
it really is.
She allows me to do things with characters that you don't always get to do in comic books. And it's so important for teens, because teenagers, they don't always tell you what they're thinking or how they feel. There's a lot that they keep hidden. There's a lot that Jill keeps hidden. It's a huge part of her character. But I would never get away with the amount of subtext that I get away with if Roberta was not capturing the emotion panel to panel. So I got really lucky with her.
Yeah. It's a great looking book. I did want to ask you about something that you mentioned earlier. This also, I think, officially came out as news probably last week, that you're doing the Faith the Winx saga graphic novel. That is continuing the canceled series? So it's sort of like following up on the story, or is it going between the scenes, or how is that working time-wise?
So initially, I think that they were just going to do a separate story because, you know, Maverick partnered with Rainbow, who's the parent company of Winx and Winx Club, before the Netflix show was canceled. So then when it was canceled, they thought, oh, because there were, I don't know if you guys know, but there was a major campaign to like save Faith Winx, and the fans were really upset. And so they decided that, okay, the graphic novels, that it'll be a continuation of the Netflix. So it was kind of amazing because, you know, I work in TV as well, but I've never been given the opportunity to like, oh, hey, okay, here's a show, just take over and do whatever you want with it from here. So yeah, it was like a little bit of wish fulfillment without having to worry about budget at all. Fantastic. Nice. You know, when you're dealing with fairies and magic and a magic school, you do not want to be thinking about dollar signs. That was just like officially, we announced it at New York Comic Con, the book, but I know it was like, it kind of officially hit the news just recently.
Yeah. Yeah. Comic cycles are weird because people will announce stuff and then it gets announced again and it gets announced a third time. But yes, it
keeps announcing.
Because always of that, announcing. I was really unprepared for what happened, at least on Instagram. I'm like, I'm a 40-year-old mom. Like, my posts get like 2 likes, and I'm like, yes, you know? But this, first of all, this post exploded. It's like almost at like 17,000 likes.
Woo!
There are so many comments, and it's just Winx fans fighting.
Wow.
Like, first it was like a lot of like backlash, like who wants this, whatever, which of course I think is funny because like a lot of people wanted it. But then famously, now it's become this battle of like, who are the bigger Winx fans, like the Fate Winx people or the Winx Club people. And I'm just like, I'm watching all of this unfold and I'm like, wow, what have I stepped into? Because at this point, I've only done, you know, creator owned my own little, you know, independent projects. And now I'm stepping into IP territory and it's really fun.
Are you getting to know about all the ships and everything? Is that anything you're wading into at all? Or are you standing back?
Oh my God, what do you mean ships?
Alex, cool it, dude. Stay no,
because
comments.
Listen, I'll full disclosure. Like, I watched a couple comments. Of episodes of the show, but I didn't keep up with it. But I know anything that has a diehard fan base, of course, people are going to be into shipping two characters together. I don't know which ones, so I can't.
Oh, yes. Okay. I missed the boat. I missed the boat on one of them because I didn't know that fans were really, really hungry for a love affair between Stella and Beatrix.
Okay.
And I especially didn't get that. Beatrix died at the end of season 2. So I didn't think that people would still be looking for that. But they are. Yes. So there might be a way that I can service that now that I know Ooh. That that's that's wanted.
Oh, interesting.
If the books continue, and judging by I don't know anything 40-year-old mom here, but judging by the amount of likes that the first post got, I would say that that's boding pretty well for another arc, because we did two, and that's kind of like a full arc. So the first book is coming out this year. I think the second book's coming out next year. But yes, I picked up there's two relationships that I kind of picked up and shepherded from little nuggets of the second season. And one of them is Tara and Kat, because Tara had come out of the closet in season 2. So that was really fun. And I was able to give that relationship and the issues that we're dealing with something directly from my personal life and a romantic issue that I was dealing with, which was really nice and cathartic. And then another relationship that I was able to kind of run with is Riven and Musa, who are just very sexy characters in their own right. They're so, like, tough.
Get them together, I say.
Bravado. So, yeah,
I did. Together are sexy.
Awesome. I love it.
Great.
Olivia, this is great. Very excited about all the wig stuff. More excited about the Jill and the Killers stuff. And I can't wait to see how that series turns out.
We still have some time for this one. But, yes, Jill and the Killers comes out tomorrow. And
yeah.
I will be signing books at Collector's Paradise in NoHo for those of you in the North Hollywood area at 5:00. And this weekend, I will be at Universal City Walk from 4 to 6, signing books at Things from Another World, and at Golden Apple from 11 to 1 earlier that day.
Yeah, Golden Apple.
So yeah, come by if you want your book signed and hit me up. I want to know what people think. So I'm at Olivia C. Briggs. I'm moderately terrified, but please, tell me.
Read the comments. We know that. So.
I do. Something I'll probably have to stop. But for now, I read them because I'm morbidly curious.
Right. Oh boy,
awesome! Great. And if you go to the signing, you'll get a free hat as well, right?
Yes. Well, okay. This is
within
this,
reason, I assume.
It's while supplies last.
While supplies last. Okay.
I only ordered 200, and my kids have already stolen a bunch for their friends. I don't even know how many I have left.
Oh, no. You're gonna find like 5. I only have 5.
Friends do my children have? Kids.
Awesome. Olivia, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, great congrats.
Again. Thanks, congrats on everything.
Great to see you. Great book.
You too. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. There we go. Ooh, there we go. I clicked the wrong thing. Sorry, Olivia. Hi. Okay, there we go. The book is called Jill and the Killers. It's called, she mentioned.
Killing it. Just killing really it. Crushing that, Jill the end the of that interview. It.
Absolutely.
You're killing.
We've been doing interviews for years, and in no way.
There's a lot of windows up.
There's a lot of buttons.
Pete. Yeah. Come on. Tech? I'm getting old.
All you gotta do is get your beer to connect with your mouth. Like, that's not.
Sometimes
I'm doing that well. That up sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Oh, boy. Anyway, Jill the Killers is out January 31st, which is tomorrow as we're taping, as we're broadcasting here from Oni Press. Definitely check it out because it's awesome. And why don't we bring in our final guest of the evening, another returning guest. Very excited to talk to him about this absolutely wild project coming out from Top Shelf.
Yes.
Mary Tyler Moorhawk, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Baker. Dave,
hey,
hello.
Hey.
Thank you for your patience. Thanks for coming on the show. So excited to talk about this. So this is coming out, I believe, February 14th. It's a perfect Valentine's Day present for your sweetheart. Make sure to give it to them. Man, I love this book. You've done some very interesting off the beaten path projects. This is on another level entirely, I think. It correct me if I'm wrong about any of these details, but basically it creates this alternate reality show called Mary Tyler Moore Hawk. That's sort of an adventure show. And you get to see that through graphic novel pages. But at the same time, we follow somebody who is searching out the history and creation of this show in a very behind the scenes, tell all expose, not biography, but like true life story, as they're searching for the creator of Mary Tyler Moore Hawk, Dave Baker. Lots of balls in the air as you're doing something like this. Where do you start with a project like this? Like, what is the initial genesis when you're sitting down to craft something like this? Where did this begin?
It's been so long. I don't even know. I think the rough idea was years and years and years ago, I had this idea to do a book that would be, the joke would be, they would all be unproduced screenplays of a series finale to a show that never got to end. So it would be like 9 screenplays each, and the book would be called Series Finale, the Series. And it would be a joke, like fake deep dive into this television show that existed in the future, where it was supposed to be a show that was going to wrap up all of these unfinished TV shows, and each script I would write full episodes of the final episodes of all these TV shows.
Wow.
And then I got like 4 episodes in, and I was like, you know, it'd be funnier if I just took this one specifically and made it into a comic. And that was Mary Tyler Moore Hawk. And I started then just making a comic. And then from there, it was supposed to just be like an 8-page insert in that idea. And then it turned into a story about a guy. Because as you said, like, the book is half comic, half prose novel. And the comic you're reading eventually gets adapted into a TV show that only lasts for 9 episodes. And then we're reading all these prose excerpts and journals and zine entries. It's like an epistolary piece by a guy 100 years in the future who's also named Dave Baker, who's obsessed with the TV show. And then he discovers that he has the same name as the guy who made the show. And this sends him off on a weird metatextual fandom nightmare quest to try and meet this person.
Wow.
So given that there are multiple Dave Bakers in this book, where is the real Dave Baker in that? How much of yourself did you put in here? I guess.
Well, Dave Baker. So there's 2 answers to that question. You ready? This will be the kayfabe answer, right? We'll just pretend like nobody can hear the other parts of this. But so I just opened the door and there was a package on my front door, and I just opened it up and there were all these pages, and then I compiled them together and submitted them to Top Shelf, and they published it. And now this book exists and I didn't have to draw it at all. Somehow it got here from the future. I don't know how that happened.
Oh, wow. And wow. End of interview. Thanks so much
for coming. And then the other component of it is, that's like that basically is the opening of the book, is you're reading like an essay from me detailing how all of that happened. And I didn't draw the book. These are all pages from that old Dave Baker in the distant future, and he shipped them back to me in the present, and that's what's been published. Why am I doing this to myself? I don't fucking know. I don't know. I thought it was fun like one time, and then I just continually back on.
But let me say, that's what it feels like, and it's very gratifying to be reading this future thing that is also old, something that I feel like comics fans love. Like, we love the future, but we also love like newsprint and old comics. So like, you managed to have both in this, which is awesome. But I want to talk about the art style. How'd you land on this like sort of hyper detailed, monochromatic-ish color palette?
Well, I think it's very flattering that you aren't assuming that this is the only way I can draw, and that it was a choice. Thank you.
Well, it's beautiful. I will say, I mean it, like, it's beautifully done, and the intricacy of it is what I really keyed into.
Thank you. So, I'm a big fan of like Franco-Belgian stuff, like Hergé and Tintin. I lived in France for a while earlier this year and went to the Hergé Museum in Belgium, and it was like my version of going to Mecca. Like, it was amazing. It was so fun. And seeing those original pages, like, you know, just standing there with my nose against them, being like, oh my God, look, you can see he erased the nose like 4 times. Wow. So the answer to this is, I love, I love Hergé and Katsuhiro Otomo and Jeff Darrow. And so it's just like a soup of everything. Doug Wildey. Mm-hmm. It's a soup of everything that I love. I tried to put it together in a package of something someone at some point might think is interesting.
Well, what about the design of the main character then? Because she very much stands out from everything else in terms of her simplicity. And of course,
100%.
It's important to capture her and make her an intriguing character in the middle of all these text pages, in the middle of all these wild visuals. So what went into that creation?
Yeah, so I'm obsessed with boy adventure, girl adventure, the whole genre as a whole, like Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, Trixie Belden, mm-hmm. Torchy Lane, all of that stuff. And I think the thing that's really interesting about that genre is that the main wish fulfillment that they're selling is that there's nothing wrong with childhood. And in fact, children are aware of things that the adults can't perceive. Like it's really like perception porn is what that whole genre is selling. You know, like even just like when you think about, you know, the covers by Rudy Nappy to all those classic 50s and 60s Nancy Drew Hardy Boys covers, they're always just looking, you know, that's like it's Nancy Drew and she's looking somewhere. It's Frank and Joe Hardy and they're looking somewhere. And
That's such a great observation. Because sort of my key into those books when I was a kid was like, look, they're just paying attention like I do all the time, but nothing happens in my life. But they
Totally. Them. Yeah. And I think that there's those books are selling a wish fulfillment of that, like childhood has an innate awareness and an innate goodness in it that you lose as you age. And, you know, of course, we as adults are aware of the complexity of existence and the push and pull of compromises that come with maturity. But as a smaller person, as a younger person, the adult world seems so just like weirdly complicated. Like it doesn't need to be that complicated. Like old man Miller down the lane is selling dogs, you know? And I wanted to try and represent that idea that MTMH is just like somebody who is inherently good, and not because it's the right thing to do, but that's because that's innately who she is. And so I used the circle motif of, you know, her head is a circle, her ears are two circles, and her buns are two circles to represent that. A, because you know, humans are drawn to circular things because we are predisposed to try and take care of our and nurture our young, and you know, their heads are circular in form. But also, you
I'm
see
raising
that
two circles.
But you see that motif throughout like design in everywhere, you know, that's the reason the Oval Office is round and not square. So you can't have an emotional place to hide. You know, that's the reason why it was designed that way. So there would be no escaping the view of the.
It used to actually be a square and the president would hide in the corner most of the time and they never find him. So eventually they smoothed it out. They smoothed it out.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to say I don't really have a question, but you know, we read comics a lot and talk about great comics, but artistically, just opening this comic, what washed over me was just so powerful and specific and amazing that I just wanted to say thank you. I don't know like how long it took or how agonizing all those details, but I just wanted to say thank you, man, because like being it was such a joy to open up and to kind of dive into this insane world that I just wanted to kind of say thanks, man.
Dude, you don't even know what that means to me. Like the thing that's so – somebody asked me a little while ago, maybe like a couple days ago, you know, do I feel – because this is not me being big-headed. I'm, in fact, criminally self-effacing. But like the book has been getting a positive response. It got a starred review from Publishers Weekly. I got compared to David Foster fucking Wallace. Like, I am not claiming that. I mean, I would like to be. That's cool. I love him as a writer. Yeah. But, you know. But somebody asked me the other day, like, does it feel like you've made it? And I'm like, no, not at all. But what it does feel like is a narrowly avoided near-death experience coupled with a birthday cake. I genuinely mean this. Like,
that's really funny.
Like, everybody passed on this book, and I understand 100% why they passed on it. You know, my agent took it out. Everybody said no. I personally went and pitched it, like, 15 different places. Everybody said no. And I totally get it. It's non-commercial. It's weird. There's not a lot of things like it. 100% no harm, no foul. But Chris Staros, the publisher of fucking Top Shelf Comics, read this thing and was like, you know what? This thing's either going to be huge or a massive failure, but I think we should try it. Let's see what happens.
That's so nice.
And I think that that's just, I just think the world of him, I'm so incredibly, incredibly grateful, because if we were living in the alternate universe where MTMH didn't get published, I would be a little upset. Just a little, because it took like 5 years to make this thing.
Oh, yeah, I mean, man. You can see the time in it. And let me make a sort of more a commercial comparison to try to speak to people who maybe don't know the references you are making as much. Like, this feels like what you graduate into after you are an Umbrella Academy fan.
Oh,
like,
wow.
If you like Umbrella Academy, this feels like the more like, oh, I'm ready to move into something that has like even bigger ideas, more complexity, and is mashing up different things.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, go for it.
No. I was just going to bring up a question from the comments. This is over on YouTube. Derek is wondering, why marry Tyler Moore?
So the short answer is I forget it's a pun most of the time, because frankly, like, I like Mary Tyler Moore, but I just have like a giant list of pun names, and for whatever reason Mary Tyler Moorhawk, just I thought that was funny, and now 4 years later here I am, and it's a very common question. People are like, so what about this is referential to Mary Tyler Moore? The answer is nothing.
It's a great name.
It's just a funny name that I thought would be cool. And
I love saying funny names.
I think there's a certain level, like you're saying, having read the book, I don't think it really has anything to do with Mary Tyler Moore. But if you wanted to plumb into it a little bit, this is talking about television history. Mary Tyler Moore is a cornerstone of television history. 100%. So at least it gets you thinking in that direction, potentially.
Yeah.
And there's so much beret throwing in this. Just epic.
Yeah. That's the next arc is she's gonna have her like odd job era, murdering people
deadly
with a
beret.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say that's actually one of the things that Chris Staros asked me. You know, he was very complimentary. He was very like, this, you know, I sent him the PDF and he was like, this, it's very apparent you put a lot of work into this, but I have two questions. One, is Mary Tyler Moore in this or related to this in any way, because we don't want to deal with lawsuits? And I was like, no, she's not at all. And he was like, second thing, the ears, Mickey Mouse? And I was like, no, just the same circular principle of design, has nothing to do with Mickey Mouse. And he was like, okay, cool.
Well, but again, same thing, right? Like, it's hard to look at Mary Tyler Moorhawk without thinking about Mickey Mouse, and it is all this stew of television ideas that you're playing with at the same time.
Also, same thing. Chris Staros, great name.
Is
right?
It real?
Wow.
Nobody
are
knows.
Are we developing a conspiracy theory right now? What are we pulling together?
Yeah. I also noticed, and I hope this isn't too much of a spoiler, I think it's not, probably an Easter egg, but you snuck a Halloween boy in there at one point. Are there other Easter eggs for other works of yours in the book?
100%. Yes, there's many. Nice. I am very impressed that you saw Halloween Boy. Thanks. Very, very impressed. That's mostly because I kind of just assume that no one's ever really paying attention. So I'm always just like, yeah, then I'll put this reference in here and I'll be the only one who knows it. Yeah, he's in there. And also, there's a bunch of characters from the Moorhawk Institute for Increasing Tomorrows that are in Halloween Boy. Primarily Dreeb Lazenby, the head-handed psionic secret agent who may or may not be the illegitimate son of George Lazenby.
Just saying, George Lazenby, great rap. I love it.
I wanted to ask you a question. This is a little bit off of this, but I wanted to ask you a question about your overall bibliography, I guess we'd call it. So you've got this book, Mary Tyler Moorhawk, that we've been talking about right now. You got A Halloween Boy that we mentioned. You've got Fuck Off Squad is another one of your books. And then you also have Star Trek Voyager 7's Reckoning.
Yeah.
how does that fit in? How did that happen in particular?
I don't know if you were aware of this, but I'm a massive Star Trek fan. Like huge, like so big that like I went to the Skirball in 2020 when they had their massive retrospective of all the costumes in the set. I went to the San Diego convention, or not the San Diego Museum that's associated with SDCC when they had their Star Trek exhibition, only to see Gene Roddenberry's computer because I had seen everything else that they had in there. But I was like, I gotta see his computer. I gotta see it.
Awesome. Wow.
So I'm a massive Trek fan. And in terms of how it fits in, I don't know. I mean, I guess how does the Masters of the Universe Beast Man one shot that Kevin or fucking Kirkman and Tony Moore did fit into their work on Walking Dead? I don't know. Comics are hard. People try to pay rent, but also
that was weird. Just say yes. So let me ask you then, as a Trek fan, what is your current, like, what are you liking in the current expanding Trekverse?
Dude, so this is, okay, one, I love Strange New Worlds. I love everything that they're doing with that show. I can't wait for the next season. It's fantastic. But recently I've been, I need that high. So I've been watching all the fan stuff. Have you guys seen Star Trek New Voyages or Star Trek Continues?
No,
bro. Oh my god, this is a whole podcast. Let me just say, the short pitch is: cast your mind back to 2005. There's an Elvis impersonator, a professional Elvis impersonator named James Colley. He's unmarried. He has no children, but he makes a lot of money impersonating Elvis. So what does he do? He wants to live out his inner fantasy of being Jim Kirk. So he spends $300,000 to build an actual screen-accurate replica of the Enterprise Bridge, gets a bunch of nerds together, and films fully completed episodes of the original series using the original music cues, new special effects, and a bunch of the original actors. Walter Koenig, Nichelle Nichols, George
Takei.
Yes, they all come back, and they made a movie called Star Trek Gods and Monsters, I think? Gods and Men? I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's a 2.5-hour feature film. And then they made 10 episodes of Star Trek, the original series, where James Colley is our boy, Jim Kirk, and then all, varying other people play the characters because it's they filmed it over like 15 years. But there's an episode where it's called To Serve All My Days, written by DC Fontana, the classic Star Trek screenwriter. And it was written specifically to get Walter Koenig to fly to upstate New York, bringing it thematically full circle.
Oneonta?
Ticonderoga is where they shoot it. Ticonderoga.
Close.
Yeah. And the episode is, what if Chekhov gets hit by a radiation ray and starts aging rapidly? So they have the actor from the fan series, and then Walter Koenig wearing a wig, being like,
oh my God.
And the finale of the episode is he sits down on the bridge of the Enterprise and turns to Jim Kirk. And Kirk is like, Chekhov, we need you to fly the Delta 6 maneuver. Can you do it? And he's like, yes, Captain, being super old. And you can just see James Colley like vibrating. He's like, Walter Koenig called me Captain.
I can't believe I haven't heard of this. I love that this question came up. This is unbelievable. How good of an Elvis impersonator do you have to be to make $300,000 to throw to a project?
Apparently, to
make it even better, this isn't the end of the story, because one of the directors of Star Trek New Voyages has a falling out with James Colley midway through the run, leaves with like half the crew. They build their own set in South Carolina, and then they make 10 episodes of their own show, which I hate to say this. I'm sorry, James, if you're listening, I love you. You're the best. It's even better. It's so
how is this not a doc? This is a huge documentary.
Yes, it's called Star Trek Wars.
Yes.
Love it.
It's so good. It's so good.
Well, listen, Dave, thanks for coming on to talk about your Star Trek fan show. We appreciate that. I don't know if there was anything else you were here to discuss, but that's mostly what I'm going to take away from this.
Nat Towson says, Dave, you're off message.
I mean, to get it back on message, though, Mary Tyler Moore Hawk, coming out February 14th. This book is so absolutely phenomenal. So cool. Congratulations on it. I can't wait for people to read it, for David Foster Wallace Probably.
Well, he's not. He's dead. But yeah.
Yeah. He's
I wish.
Dead, so that's not going to happen. But
yeah, there's a slot. There's an opening.
There's yours. An opening to be the next one.
We're both named Dave. I mean,
You're halfway there, or you're a third.
I don't live that far from Pomona.
Here's what you do. Take $300,000. You build your own David Foster Wallace cave in your garage.
No. See, Alex, what it is I spend $300,000 building a bandana, like just the bandana and the long-haired dick, and that's just it. And it's just me being like sweaty and being like, I don't know, like the human condition. I don't know. It's like fucked up, right?
And you have one piece of paper that says Infinite Jest 2, and that's it. That's all you
have. Yeah. Infinite Jest, still Jestin.
Nice. Nice. Dave, great seeing you again. Thank you so much for coming on. Congrats on the book.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, there we go. Once again, that was Dave Baker. The book is Mary Tyler Moore Hawk. Like we mentioned, it's absolutely phenomenal. Really, definitely pick it up February 14th.
You got to pick it up.
Maybe not a great Valentine's Day present, but just a great present for yourself to get. So there you go.
Yeah, the thing you do on Valentine's Day, get a present for yourself.
Get a present for yourself.
That's the most ballsy move you could ever do on Valentine's Day. Roll in with a gift for yourself.
All right, here's a gift from me. We are going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, X, Twitter, or Twitch. And we'll get to them. They can be about absolutely anything. But first, what are you guys drinking this evening? Justin, dregs of wine?
Yes, clearly you've read the comments. I drank a lovely Negroni with dry vermouth instead of sweet, sort of a lighter Negroni, and then I was drinking some red wine to follow up.
Pete?
Hey, Gimme.
Oh, I am,
Landshark.
Knock, knock. Landshark. Who's there? Yeah. It's Landshark.
Yeah, and I'm just water tonight. Just some water.
You okay, buddy?
I had a bad cold again yesterday, so still.
Recovering. What do you have, one day cold?
I have kind of like one day colds. So there you go.
Man.
Just your immune system. Strong. weak, very weak, and then quite strong.
All right, whatever.
You're like the Hulk. You're like Banner Hulk. Banner Hulk.
Banner Hulk, Banner Hulk, except mostly better, let's be honest. Why don't we move on to a question here? This is from Stray Bullet. How's Pete's Need wall coming along? Nerd wall. How's this nerd wall coming along? Pete, what's the update?
Empty. Are you looking at comics?
There are all these boxes and that they're all empty over here because I've got comics spread everywhere because I'm alphabetizing, putting things into their own, like all my Spider-Man comics in one box, and so it's a lot to go through. So it's at different stages of insanity right now.
Nice. Do you leave the house ever? You have a new house, obviously, and it sounds like you're...
Yeah, I go on walks and, go to the grocery store and stuff like that,
Yeah. But you gotta go hang out in every room, right? Family. You're gonna do that?
Yeah, eventually. I can't move in this room anymore because it's all comics, but...
best place to sleep. Put your head down on a lovely stack of Wolverine. Oh, my God. Oh, wow. You are surrounded. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. You're like the comic book shop that Nat Towson shops in and sends pictures to our Patreon Slack.
Yeah, exactly.
Pete's House, a.k.a. Oops All Comics.
Oops All Comics.
Oops All Comics.
Another impossible question here from Scheuchler. This is his weekly thing. What are your favorite examples of completely unofficial fan productions? Not impossible, but...
Hard to track those down, I guess, in general.
What was that Spider-Man fan film that came out recently from a bunch of racists, and they were really racist, and then they did it anyway, and it was really bad? That one.
That's the one you love?
Spider-Man Lotus, yeah. Very cool.
No idea what you're talking about. I got very close to doing a shot-for-shot remake of the movie Willow set in Brooklyn, where we just sort of like made it up in a scene-by-scene basis.
Wow.
That's pretty awesome. Pete, you got an answer?
It would have been. We should have done
Dirty Laundry.
That is actually the best
answer. That's a very good answer. All right, what do we have there? This is another one for Straight Bullet. I'm opening a restaurant. Menu will change all the time. What's a dish you'd like to see on one of the six courses?
Oh my God.
Ooh, we have so much control here, I feel like.
Well, and let's shout out officially. Stray Bullet, our official chef.
Stray Bullies!
Opening a restaurant, his first, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's his first restaurant where he is literally like, is doing the whole thing. It's called Wild South in New Orleans. Get to it as soon as it's officially open.
Yeah, everything that I've eaten that this man has touched has been like the greatest thing. His chef skills are just unbelievable.
Well, Pete, let's start with you then, because he made a unique meal for you. Is there anything off of that menu that would you want to see on the menu?
All of it. But I do, I love his palate for spice. Like he likes to, he has a great kind of sense of spiciness. So I would love to see, because it's New Orleans, I would love to kind of see some kind of something with shrimp that's got a little kick to it or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like spicy buffalo shrimp or something like that. Like
not that, but no. This guy's a real fucking chef, man. Don't you dare
bring up like some tater skins or jalapeno poppers.
Give us that respectable garbage plate.
What about an app platter, you know, like got a couple of different apps on it. So you don't have to choose and you can share with the table.
You know, this started out nice and you ruined it. This man is living his dream. He's doing something that's unbelievable and you're just fucking a dick.
My dream is to have an app platter pretty much every day.
And I mean, I'll tell you what, I know that's true.
That is true.
Alex's dream is to have like coconut shrimp, hush puppies, and tater tots at every meal he can get.
And I'm making it happen. I got a new job and I'm very close. I'm on Burger King's mailing list now. So
Ooh. It's
really working out.
Yeah, that's a downward spiral.
I got an email today from McDonald's. They were like, hey, did you hear the news about the Hamburglar? And I was like, everything's in my favor currently.
Alex, you're just saying beige flags back to back. I got an email from Burger King is what you were just bragging about. What's happening?
What's the opposite of a Netflix?
I don't know. Email from Burger King, I guess.
Yeah.
This is a question from Derek, maybe a question for Stray. What alcohol should be used for the CBC drinking game? This is something that's being discussed over in YouTube in the comments a little bit. Everybody is very surprised. We don't have an official drinking game. I feel like we did years ago.
Yeah.
Am I crazy about that?
There was back when we were doing it live, in a black box theater. Yeah. And it was...
Anytime Pete had a secret Punisher quiz, we would just drink.
No, I thought it was anytime I swore, you would drink. Anytime Alex said something that was piffy, and then when Justin did his kind of like, you know,
fast explanation.
Yeah.
Fast explanation of nonsense.
But what alcohol should be used? I'd say like some sort of banana liqueur, so I could use and get tight bananas.
Disgusting. Yeah. Well, first off, shout to the previous question, Derek Mainhar, and a course called Crazy Type Bananas. Definitely great end of meal course. A super tiny flavor intense bananas. I mean, really, it should be tequila shots. I think for
tequila
or any sort of drinking game. Yeah.
Wow, you just want people to get fucked up.
I'm not trying to. That just feels like the most. You can't do. What other shot are you going to do?
Well, it doesn't have to be shots, you know. And with the drinking game, you can just, you know, chug a beer. There's other things you can do. You know what I mean?
A land shark, maybe? Pete, mm-hmm. you seem to have that around.
I have a lot of it. A plethora.
A complete land shark. Michael Eamon says, whenever Justin wears a scarf, jello shot. Watch out. That'll get you.
Dude, this scarf game is ridiculous.
Next question. In the spirit of orange flavor, what are your favorite alt comics? I think I mentioned this when we were talking about it, but Raw back in the day when like Art Spiegelman was doing it, I remember, I have an issue somewhere on my shelf, but picking that up at Forbidden Planet and just blowing my mind in terms of, wait, you can do this in comics? This is entirely different from everything that I expected. And it really opened a whole new world, honestly.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what I feel very disconnected from the alt comic scene these days.
Yeah, I mean, I had like friends who made zines and stuff like that that I would like to read, and then
how about,
you know,
Pete's comic that Pete was doing for a while?
There you go.
Yeah, there was that. Yeah, I
shout it out, Pete. Tell us what it is. Is it still out? Is it still online at all?
No.
Astronaut Jones. What was that?
Astronaut.
Captain Jones.
Captain Jones. It's not that different.
That was pretty close. He is in space.
It was in space.
He is an astronaut.
Yeah.
Technically.
Well, yeah. He's more of a space pirate, but okay.
You should put it back online. Put it back online. The people demand it. Why don't we do one last one here? We have two more. From Stanley, any new show review podcasts coming? Not currently. We're talking about some stuff, so we'll see. But we do have our Marvel and DC podcasts. We're rebooting those back up. I didn't realize we hadn't done the DC podcast since like September or something. So yeah, we're going to do those more regularly. And then Invincible is coming.
So someone hasn't seen Aquaman yet.
Yes, we're going to do Aquaman. We'll do Aquaman.
We got to do Aquaman. We are talking about doing a looking back at a show on Netflix that we haven't touched yet, and doing a
Outer full Banks. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, shouts to that. I would definitely do that. and doing a full watch down of that. But the one I'm excited about that we have coming up is I won't say exactly, but we're going to do a draft. We're going to do a draft coming up here that's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, there we go. Good tease.
Yeah, nice.
Edward Doherty says, what's the best secondhand comic book purchase or find you've made?
Ooh, interesting
question. Secondhand.
I mean, I bought a bunch of very old, Jughead comics years ago that I have come to really enjoy.
There was, and I'm sorry if I got this wrong, but I don't remember who gave this to me, and I know that's very rude, but somebody for the show, maybe it was Aaron and John, and if I'm getting it wrong, sorry, but sent me the Del Close comics.
Oh wow.
Wasteland, that's the name of
it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't buy it, but that was pretty neat. Last but not least, let's take this one from Nat. Are there any stories from Krakoa, from the Krakoa era, that you could recommend to someone out of context?
Oof.
Nope.
Tough.
Oof. The only one that maybe I'd recommend is Uncanny Spider-Man, just because we love that. And you don't need a ton of context. All the context is in the book to understand what's going on. So yeah, you can definitely check that out. Otherwise, somebody was asking me the other day, they were like, hey, what do I actually need to read? Because I kind of want to catch up before these final books. And not much. You need to read like Fall of X, House of X from Hickman. You should probably read Sins of Sinister. And then
I agree with you, Alex. I know what you're going to say, Pete. Just wait till the end and you can have your slag off. But the Sins of Sinister, I think, is going to be important, but it keeps getting more confusing.
Yes.
And like, honestly, we're going to talk about some comics in the stack this week that are going to be even more confusing, and that's fine. But I think that points to the real clue, I think, is read Jerry Dugan stuff.
The Dukes.
He's I think the secret spine of this era right
except
now.
It's also like, if you want to go for that, if you're like, okay, you got to read all of X-Men and Invincible Iron Man, then you also need to read everything that Kieran Gillen is doing on Immortal X-Men and everything else, because those are the two things that are heading together. And to make it easier, I really think, like, you read Fall of X, House of X, you read Inferno from Hickman, and then you can jump right ahead to these final books. Sins of Sinister, final books, you're fine. You'll be a little lost, but you're going to be lost anyway.
Well, that's the thing, is I think you're going to be lost anyway. I would say something to read that I really enjoyed that would work out of context, I think, is Children of the Vault, the Cable Bishop story, which I really liked. But we're getting to the point where it's either all folding in continuity stuff or last chance to take a continuity and tell a weird story about it. So
I was going to bring up this. I was going to bring up this comment from Derek where he says, "So your question, all of them? Absolutely not. That's skipping like 30 different titles, including all of the ongoing X-Men book and everything else. You could just pick it up from these little snippets of events. There's a lot of stuff that I liked in there, but really, if you want to speed ahead, you just need to read those initial miniseries, two other miniseries, and you're good to go."
Yeah. I also like Realm of X.
Good stuff. There's lots of good stuff in there. Anyway. All right. Why don't we move on to our next section?
Sorry. We said Pete was going to have last word on that. Pete?
Well, that's the nice thing about comic books is, you know, sometimes when, you know, some things might aren't going your other way, there's other areas that you can just dive into and explore and enjoy yourself and wait. You can just wait for it to, you know, things happen and then pick it up and start reading. And you don't have to know about the insane stuff that happened beforehand.
Here's the thing. You don't actually need to read any of this. Like, you could just stop reading comics at any point, right, Pete?
I think being surrounded by
comics... Not what I'm saying.
You can just stop. I think
being surrounded by comics
go outside.
Calmer. I think the it's like a hug. That was the calmest answer he could have said about X-Men.
Right. Yeah, it was.
You're being hugged by comics.
Well, anyway, I'm being hugged by trivia, which is our next section. Take it away, Pete.
Woo! All right. This is the part we give back to you. A lovely audience. We really appreciate you listening and supporting. It's an opportunity to win $25 free Midtown Comics online. Yeah, we just need a volunteer and then you win $25 free. Pretty sweet. And then you just go over to Midtown Comics and cash it out. You know what I mean? Get yourself some fun stuff to read.
Yeah. Cash or, you know, just like throw it away because you're not going to read comics anymore because, like, who needs them?
That's Alex, not what I'm saying. That is not what I'm saying. And don't come at me. You quit comic. You know what I mean? Like, you got to a point where you're like, I'm not fucking reading this. You know what I mean? Like, it happened to you too. So don't
be a fucking dick. I have never stopped reading comics. Once I started, it's been a lifelong crippling addiction. Okay? You guys bailed at times.
Yeah, I bailed when I learned about dating, and then I stopped dating, and I started reading comics again.
Why did you? Well, I took care of this. What did it take for you to learn about dating? You take a class? Well, how did that work?
I finally got to the issue of X-Men where two people were dating each other, and I was like, what? You can do that?
Rogue is going to kiss Gambit and suck his life out. I want that.
Yeah. We got a... I think Michael Emond is volunteering?
Yeah.
That's hard to say. I think Easy Reader said me, and Michael Emond said him. So,
yeah, but Michael, do you want to do it? Yeah, let us know in the comments. Confusing,
because Michael maybe hasn't done it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
It's hard to keep track. Let's check the trivia database.
Yeah, you keep
okay. Track. Michael's in. All right, here we go, Michael. All right, today's trivia is on the top. Get you in the feel moments in comics, and a small nod to the legend. Lynn Marta, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. According to CBR, what was the number 7 most heartbreaking moment in comics? Was it A, Walking Dead number 100, Glenn dies, spoiler, B, Julius Randle hurting his shoulder in the fourth quarter, or C, Arthur Rosenberg, a Bergie reference?
Another great setup from the star of trivia.
Oh, man.
That's been there the entire time. That battle.
All right. A is correct. All right. Here we go. Question number two.
Truth.
What was the number 8 on the list? Was it A, When Your Parents Fight, B, Kitty Pryde Sacrificing Herself, or C, Sarah Jessica Parker?
When Your Parents Fight?
Man, there's nothing that makes you cry more. You know what I mean?
You would cry when your parents would fight?
You didn't?
You would just start crying? That would make it more intense, I bet.
Yeah. B is correct. All right. Must have had nice parents. Anyway, question number 3.
This is therapy, sort of.
this whole show is. Question number 3. Number 5 on the list was one of my favorites. Was it A, the Flashpoint letter? B, what's the name of the line who is great at bringing you stuff? C, Leo Getter.
Wow.
A rare setup.
Setup punchline. I feel like someday a future society will look back and Pete will be the William Shakespeare. He's dropping Leo Getter.
What was great was our last guest was talking about how much he loves names. I was like, dude, that's my whole deal, bro. Eliza Dushku, come out.
Flashpoint letter, so heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, there we go. Congratulations. Congratulations, Michael. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we will get that off to you. Pete, what is the secret movie?
Of course, we're talking about the 1984 monster Footloose.
Now, your feet are going to have to get loose if you're going to make your way over to the comic book store to pick up all the new comics that are out this week, unless you give them up like I have. But what are you guys looking forward to? It's coming out. Pete?
I'm looking forward to The Incredible Hulk number 8, a surprise to nobody, as well as Batman and Robin annual number 1 and Batman Offworld number 3.
Wow.
That week for you.
Yeah.
He eaten up all the Batman titles, which I also enjoyed. I have to shout out a title I really enjoyed and continue to enjoy, Local Man number 9, closing out this arc. Fantastic. I just love this series from top to bottom, taking like your classic 90s style Image character and giving him a whole new world. A lot of big revelations in this issue, I bet.
Couple of comics that I'm really looking forward to. Lilo and Stitch number 1 is coming out from Dynamite from Greg Pak.
You gotta get him on the show.
Yeah, but that's super fun. First time Lilo and Stitch has been in comic book form. Also, Avengers Inc. number 5 from Marvel. This has been such a great, fun noir mystery series. I'm really bummed that this is the final issue of it. That stinks. I wish it had done better. And last but certainly not least, I want to give a shout out to an issue out today. DC Power 2024 number 1, which a lot of other great stories, has a new story from N.K. Jemisin and Jamal Campbell set in the universe of Far Sector. That makes it a must buy.
My God. And
like a real capstone to that. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if you're at all a fan of the Far Sector run, like you have to read this.
Yeah. So that is great. All of those books are going to be in our Stack podcast that comes out Wednesday at 9 a.m. in its own dedicated Stack feed and also in the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Michael Phillips for coming on to talk about Orange Flavor. Yeah. Olivia Quartero Briggs for talking about Odie Press's Jill and the Killers. Yes. And Dave Baker for coming on to talk about Mary Tyler Moorhawk. Three great guests. We're going to have two more great guests next week, two more returning guests. Nate Powell is going to be here to talk about his new book, Fall Through. And Bob Fingerman is going to be back to talk about That's Some Business You're In. Bunch of other podcasts to check out. Comic Book Club News, bringing the news every weekday of the week, Monday through Friday. Marvel Vision, we have a bunch of news podcasts that have been rolling out. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, also news podcast. We'll get to Aquaman, don't worry. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice, except for Google Podcasts, at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
We're letting Aquaman marinate.
Fish is always better later.
Yeah.
He's grinding.